Welcome once again to Dive Lecture 7, the seventh time we've done this, actually the fourth time here. And just to remind you, this is all about, we're doing this for Scuba Trust. And I'm not sure what the common noun for buckets is, probably a bucket of buckets, but Lou's brought lots from Scuba Trust. So at any point of the evening, between the intermissions or between talks, if you're feeling generous, please put your change in here. Now, a bit of boring admin, phones off, okay, mobile phones off, or silent, or vibrate, whatever you prefer. I know which one I do. it says sort of phones off and no heckling, no snoring. And if it being Burns night tonight, if there's any sort of fruity Scotsman in kilts, put your pants on, will you? Our first main speaker this evening is going to be Rick, all about cave diving. Then we're having an intermission, then Frank Gardner after the intermission, and Monty Halls. But before, without much further ado, to introduce this evening, a man I first saw in The Hit with Tim Roth, now a passionate designer of crisps and chocolate, the hardest man in philately, Terence Stamp.
Eddie Murphy told me that the ugliest people always rush down to the front. So I'll just see how we're doing tonight. Oh, not bad, not bad. So I'm completely unqualified to talk about diving. I am completely qualified to be here in this august building, as I've traveled to most of the corners of the earth. But diving came to me quite late in life. It's one of the love-hate relationships you have when you marry a younger woman. And the reason that I came to it so late in life was that although I was born with salt water in my DNA, my dad was in the Merchant Navy from when he was 15. He was torpedoed twice during World War II. I had a kind of a fear of the ocean, and it wasn't really appeased when I was shooting a film called Modesty Blaze off the coast of Sicily, and a very flash Italian photographer said he'd teach me how to dive, which he did in about 5 minutes, but he forgot to tell me that if I ran out of air, I had to take this lead belt off. So consequently, I bugger nearly drowned me, you know. I didn't attempt diving again until about 3 years ago, when my wife said, I noticed that I could only swim one length of the New York Athletic Club pool underwater, and she could swim 2.5. And she was only little, and she's got a little rib cage. And I remarked on it that you seem to have an extraordinary, you know, control over your breath. And she confessed that she had always wanted to learn how to dive. So we learned how to scuba dive. We got our license. I kind of stopped. She went on to something called free diving, which means I may be losing her soon. However, I got involved in this because I went to, I heard from a woman who was a physio, who is a physio, who's the holder, was the holder of the women's world record for the double marathon. And we both, as we get older, we pick up injuries and they're kind of harder to fix. And she told me about the London Diving Centre where they had this tank, and you could go in and they reduce the oxygen molecules so they're tiny and they get everywhere and they fix everything. And indeed it works. And I went there quite a lot. Hence I got roped in for this. However, I never really expected to be on the stage of the Royal Geographic Society, so as I'm here, I thought I might give you a kind of shortened version of Oedipus, which I've never played, and I'm probably never going to play it, but as I say, as I'm here, and it's a stage, and you're a captive audience. I ain't going to tell you no stories. I ain't going to tell you no lies. I used to have eyes for my mother, but now I just used to have eyes.
Thank you very much indeed, Terence. Our first speaker this evening is a troglodyte in the pure form, and a very wet one at that, and of course I mean that in the nicest way. No man has been deeper in Wookiee Hole since Harrison Ford starred in the gay version of Star Wars, Rick Stanton.
Good evening. Most people consider me to be a cave diver, and that's how I get introduced. But really, I come from a potholing background. It just so happens that in the last 25 years, I used diving gear to further my aims of exploring caves. I should point out right now that I've got no diving qualification or I've had no formal instruction whatsoever. I have a regular job. I don't work in the diving industry. But most of my spare time is spent exploring caves. This is largely on a self-financing basis with a limited sponsorship. Quite fitting talking here in the RGS, because I actually consider that cave diving is one of the last possibilities that you have in the modern world of truly achieving original exploration. And this is even possible in the UK, as we shall see in a moment. Other facets of exploration, such as deep ocean or the remotest parts of the world, all within the realm of the professional explorer with a large budget. But cave diving really is left to the amateur explorer messing around in caves on a shoestring with diving gear. And what's more, there's no real reward for this. So tonight I'm going to talk about two of my recent but very contrasting projects in different parts of the world. Contrasting in that they're both in different, very widely different cave environments, and each needing a very specialised approach to achieve our aims, but both benefiting from the use of rebreathers, and also, as I'm sure you'll see, both requiring an element of commitment. I hope to be able to take you on a trip and let you feel, paint a picture of what it's really like to be on a trip, the sort of trips that we go on. And I'm going to start off talking about a cave in Italy called the Colgo de' Vecchi. If we could have the first slide, please, and the lights down. I'm going to start off by going back in time, 15 years. And this guy here is Olivier Isler. And he was the undisputed king of continental cave diving from the mid-80s right through to the late 90s. And here he is in 1990. He's developed and using this triply redundant rebreather, which he had totally designed himself. And he took it to the cave, which is one of the biggest caves in Europe, was known to be so, the Colgo de' Vecchi, to test it out. He achieved a fantastic dive for the time. He penetrated 2,400 metres, often at a depth of 50 metres, until he surfaced at the far end. And for him, this was the end of the cave. Typical of many divers, top diver, continental divers of his generation, they were purely divers. They were not interested in the dry cave. So once he'd surfaced, that was the end of it. The other problem that he faced was that the mass of his equipment, he could not take it off and wander through any bits of cave. That's a picture of him more recently in another dive, but with the same equipment. The backpack there, I think it weighs about 120 kilos. It's inseparable in a cave. You've got absolutely no chance of wandering anywhere with it. And another view from the back. As you can see, it's quite neat, and we'll come to that in a bit. It's quite neat self-contained unit. Now, a number of years ago, we identified the flaw in this continental approach. And coming from what's really an amphibious UK cave diving background, we devised techniques and modified equipment to enable us to be able to progress in this sort of terrain. So we started undertaking dives in these long continental systems and achieved quite notable results. And eventually, our thoughts turned to the Colgo da Vecchi, this 2.5 kilometre long dive and an unknown passage beyond. Just it's situated here, just in the Dolomite Alps, just over the Alps, situated in the valley. But to get there, you have to drive over the Alps. And I include this photo to show that we actually go in winter, and that might surprise some people. But this cave is a huge river cave, a river comes out of it, and the ideal time to explore it is in the heart of winter, late January, February, where any precipitation on the huge catchment behind the cave is locked up in snow and ice. If you consider spring, all this snow melts and the cave's in flood. Early summer, the same. Late summer, early August, although water levels are typically very low, being an alpine region, you get huge storms and therefore major floods. So the middle of winter, when the conditions are stable, are the ideal times to go to this cave. This is the village of Valstagna. The cave is located in the cliff under there. You can see there's a huge limestone massif behind it. Some of the water that falls 15 kilometres away and over 1,000 metres higher from the cave entrance comes out of this cave. So it's got a huge catchment. It's a big cave. This is a localised map for any divers or cave divers that are ever considering going there. It's actually got four world-class caves all within a few kilometres of themselves, an ideal place to go, and Valstagna, an ideal place to base yourself. This cave is called Elefanto Bianco, white elephant. You can see two divers in there. This is a tremendous cave. It drops straight down to 80 metres. You can look up from 80 metres and see the surface. From that point on, it descends to 120 metres, then it continues horizontally and ramping down to a final depth now of 190 metres. This then is the Colgo da Vecchi, this entrance here, situated under at least 100 metre high cliff. In front of it, this lake, and that's been caused by the damming of the river by a weir. And also over to the left or right for you is another cave called the Siori, which is a show. This area is run as a low-key show cave, and members of the public are able to go in there and look around for themselves. This is the weir that's holding up that lake, and this is in the lowest water conditions you could get. As you can see, there's still a fair amount of water coming out, a fair-sized river, and in times of flood, there'll be a metre high of water flowing over the whole of this horseshoe dam. That cave to the right, called the Siori, is located here. It's also a source of where people can go diving, and tourists can go in on the boat and have a wander around that lake. Closer up to the Vecchi entrance, you can see the water's quite clear, but it's also quite cold, about six or seven degrees centigrade. Looking out of the entrance, back towards the dam, where we can park our cars. That then is myself and John Valanthan, my partner.